and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. We have got a good one for you today. Obviously, a shocking win for UVA men's basketball up in Pittsburgh on Monday night. We have also got a lot of baseball talk coming up. Darren Vaught from D1 Baseball also does play-by-play for ACC Network. You'll hear his voice all throughout the college baseball season. He is joining us later to take a little preview of ACC baseball, plus this Virginia baseball team that was just predicted as the preseason favorite in the coaches' poll for the ACC. So we have him coming up just after the break. But first, of course, we got to talk about some basketball. Virginia coming off a loss to rivals Virginia Tech, 1-point loss after Virginia put up quite a valiant effort just to get back into that game after trailing by 13 with 6.5 minutes left. And then Andrew Rohde, his layup attempt at the buzzer just rolls off the rim. Virginia kind of going in, limping into this Pittsburgh game on a Monday night. This Pitt team on the bubble for the ACC tournament. They were on the inside heading into this matchup. But then just the first couple minutes of this game, Virginia goes on a 17-0 run to win and eventually win 73-57 in the best win of the season by far, the first quad one win of the season. They were previously 0-7 in quad one wins this year. They now actually have the same record in quad one games as Pittsburgh at 1-7 on the season in those games. And they were up by 15 at halftime. And that was with Isaac McNeely scoring 0 points, their second leading scorer, Elijah Saunders, out for the third straight game with an injury. And that's kind of the point that Ron Sanchez made. He said after the game that it was probably the most unified effort that Virginia's had from the offense to the defense this year. And I couldn't agree anymore. This is one of those games that you're going to remember. And I want to make that point real quick before we talk about some of the performances is, in a season like this, I kept getting the question, we talked about it on the podcast actually, what are the reasons to continue to watch? You know, NCAA tournament, that's long gone. Even NIT, that's gone. You know, you're looking at, you know, what is the future of this program going to be? You know, who's the next head coach going to be if Ron Sanchez is not brought back? And you're looking at different candidates. You're looking at what players are going to come back. So what is there left to watch for in this season? And the thing that I kept coming back to is this: memorable performances, memorable moments, like a win on the road at Pittsburgh against a really good Pitt team who had been a good team leading up to this game. Remembering games like that, because I always go back to the NIT season just a couple years ago in 21-22, where Virginia probably had one of their most memorable wins in the last 5 years. That night at Cameron Indoor Stadium when Reese Beekman hits a three to win that game, and just the memories of that. And although the season didn't end up where Virginia fans wanted it to in the NCAA tournament, you know, they just barely miss off being on the bubble, you know, just to kind of have a moment like that, that, you know, people still talk about, you know, wins at Cameron Indoor do not come easy, especially for Virginia over the years. You think about the Reese Beekman one, you think about Ty Jerome and the shot that he hit, just to have those kind of moments in a season like this. And I know that this win at Pitt doesn't really equate to, you know, a win at Duke with a buzzer beater, but it is a feel-good moment for the season. It's a game that people will remember at least for, you know, a little bit, and they'll remember just kind of in a dimly lit season. It was kind of the bright spot, and that's what Ron Sanchez and this crew have been looking for. You think back to the Memphis game, you think about the SMU game at home, or even the Virginia Tech game just this past weekend. They kept coming so close to just having one of those kind of bright moments in the season, and to finally get one in resounding fashion, 73-57, was quite the moment. And we talked about memorable performances. Well, how about Day-Day Ames? Career high 27 points. That's the most by a Cavalier this season, and the most by Cavaliers since Isaac McNeely scored 29 against Florida State last February. My favorite quote from Day-Day Ames after the game, he was talking to the Virginia Sports Radio Network, just said, "I was just feeling nobody could guard me." And that's exactly what it seemed like. And he talked about a certain shot when he hit, it was a step back jumper with about, you know, 12 minutes in the first half. And he hit that jumper, and that's when it kind of clicked with him. You know, I can I could have a big night here tonight. And he had 16 points, which was his previous career high that he had at Kansas State, but also this earlier this season for Virginia, had 16 points just in the first half. Adds on a few more in the second half to finish with 27 points. Finished it off with his second dunk at Virginia, off a Blake Buchanan pass while he was sitting on the floor to Day-Day Ames. Just a crazy night for him. And I kind of wrote about it in our three takeaway article after the game. It seems like the training wheels are off for Day-Day Ames. He had 11 points against Virginia Tech, and then obviously this big scoring outburst with 27 points against Pittsburgh. And it just seems like he's a little bit more free. He's getting to his spots. He's understanding a little bit more what his role can be in this offense. And it's not as much as a point guard. It's more of a just a scoring guard. You know, he had, I think, two assists last night against Pittsburgh. And but because it was more about what he was able to do himself off the dribble. You know, he has some good cuts out there. He was spotting up from three. It's more about the stuff that he can do around the rest of the offense that kind of makes him so special and a good fit for this team. Especially if he can do that more going forward. And he was playing really well off of probably the most underrated star of the night, and that was Andrew Rohde, who had 9 points, 7 rebounds, and a career high 9 assists in this game, and has returned to the starting lineup after coming off the bench against Virginia Tech and missing the game completely against Miami with what appeared to be an ankle injury. A little vague there on those details. But Rohde has been absolutely tremendous since ACC play started on December 31st. You look at his stats, he's averaging 4.8 assists and only 8 turnovers since December 31st. That was, of course, the NC State game when they really started ACC play in earnest. That is a 6.6 assist to turnover ratio since the start of the new year. Absolutely incredible what Andrew Rohde has done. And after all the criticism that he received early in the season, which it was warranted at times because he was turning the ball over a lot and he wasn't really setting up the offense as well as people thought he should be, he has really turned it around. He's been a superb player for Virginia just in the last, you know, how many ever games. And even when Virginia is not doing well, he has still been a pretty consistent force for them, not turning the ball over, had 0 turnovers on those 9 assists last night against Pittsburgh, and just has been a really good player for them. Virginia now 2 wins above the bottom of the ACC. You look at that bottom right now, obviously, top 15 teams make the ACC tournament. NC State, Boston College, Miami, they're all sitting at the bottom right now. That seems to be like the bottom three in the ACC. So if Virginia can kind of build some success coming off this Pittsburgh game. And I know this is a Pitt team, I want to say as well, that was coming off a really tough loss to Wake Forest in their search to make the NCAA tournament. So maybe there was a little bit of malaise coming back on a Monday night against a Virginia team that has really not shown this type of performance all season. So you have to factor that in. But at the end of the day, it's a feel-good moment for Virginia. Also want to give a shout-out. This is also my takeaways, is to the two centers for Virginia, Blake Buchanan and Anthony Robinson. I thought their work was really kind of the driving force of the energy that Virginia had. They won the rebounding battle 33 to 21. Blake Buchanan, second career double-double, 10 points, 11 rebounds. Anthony Robinson at a career high 17 minutes and also 9 points. And let's see, he had 6 rebounds, which I think tied a career high for him. So a really positive performance from Anthony Robinson off the bench. He actually had the best box plus minus of anyone on the team. And if you look at the analytics, your most efficient players on the night, Day-Day Ames stands out there at a 25 efficiency stat. Andrew Rohde was second with 22, Blake Buchanan with 20, and then Anthony Robinson with 11 there. So just really good performances from the center. I like the two big lineups. It's something that Ron Sanchez has been experimenting with for a while, but especially against the Pitt team that likes to get pressure on the rim, really like that lineup. Obviously, it helps with the rebounding, which is kind of the main reason that Ron Sanchez is going to it, but I think just the both of those guys showed a lot of energy. So that's probably something we'll see a good bit more moving forward. Yeah, two wins above the bottom of the ACC now at 4-8 in the ACC. It's not pretty, but it's a much better spot than kind of what this team had been showing. So if they can kind of build some momentum, and guess what is coming up? It is Tony Bennett Appreciation Day against Georgia Tech back at John Paul Jones Arena on Saturday. They got an extended week off now. I know Ron Sanchez said the team was going to take a day off on Tuesday and then before they kind of get back into it. So, a really positive performance for them heading into what's sure to be a really emotional setting on Saturday for this team. Tony Bennett, the wound is still fresh. But obviously meant so much to these guys in this program. That's why a lot of these players came is to play for Tony Bennett. So it's going to be a very emotional day. Georgia Tech just got a win recently over Louisville. So, they're a team to be taken seriously. And we'll kind of see kind of how this game plays out against the Yellow Jackets coming up. But we have something more planned on that. We'll see about the details if we can get those finalized ahead of Tony Bennett Appreciation Day, just to kind of talk about that in a little bit more detail. We'll try to announce that when we have that all squared away. But for now, let's get into some ACC baseball with my good friend Darren Vaught, play-by-play announcer and also part of the D1 Baseball Network. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast here on the Saber Podcast Network. I'm joined now by Darren Vaught, a man that wears many a hat throughout the year, but baseball season, that's the hat he likes. Play-by-play announcer for pretty much anywhere. ACC Network, you can catch him on there. D1 Baseball, obviously, he is also the host of ACC Baseball, etc. And also a really interesting project that you just came out with, which is the Rentaro podcast that y'all just did. Talk a little bit about that and just kind of everything else going on, Darren.
Busy time of year for me, but my favorite time of the year, as you well know. Rentaro is a project that I pitched to the D1 guys pretty much as soon as we got back from Omaha. And I had been thinking throughout the year, and again, that was my first year. I very much entering year two as part of the D1 crew feel still like the new guy. So after we concluded this first year, I went to Omaha with them. It was an awesome experience, right? Four ACC teams, so it made sense that ACC guy is there for the event. I was like, hey, have you guys ever thought about doing a narrative podcast, like a limited series kind of thing? And the moral of the story is that some of them had the writer types, right? So it piqued the interest of like an Aaron Fitt or a Joe Healy. And so we had a meeting about it. And they were like, okay, well, what do you have in mind? And it had occurred to me over, several weeks prior that as the ACC, the host of the ACC show on the D1 Baseball Podcast Network, it is significant that we are gaining a couple of teams in Cal and Stanford. There's also this confluence of Rintaro Sasaki coming from Japan and foregoing a professional career in Japan to play collegiately in the United States. And it's just like it's an interesting way to do things. It is an unprecedented way. I know that's a sort of only in journalism word, but it's an unprecedented way for him to try to accomplish his ultimate goal of playing in the major leagues. And not to mention, I mean, he's a big time prospect. It's not just any Japanese prospect. I mean, this is a guy who is heralded internationally, right? So I came up with this concept of something that could A, introduce him to the college baseball world, and B, explain why this is so significant to a lay person, or maybe even, somebody who's a college baseball fan but does not expand their baseball fandom to touch much professional baseball, because there is a strong professional baseball tie to this. And, just like with that and the influence of the Japanese game on baseball in the United States currently is at an all-time high. So it felt like the perfect set of circumstances, and it has panned out accordingly, because I found some awesome stuff. You know, I mean, as you pursue stories, you figure out that, okay, maybe you need to talk to this person who you would not have expected was going to get involved in this. And as a part of that, as an example, Travis Bezzano, the number one pick who played at Oregon State from Australia, turns out to be part of this story. And I talked to him. Not a name I would have expected was going to be on the list of interviews when I started this thing. So yeah, it's a 6-part series on the D1 Baseball podcast feed, and we're doing 2 a week until opening day. And as of the time that we're doing this, 3 have come out. So the first 3 of 6 parts are out. It's just called Rentaro on the D1 Baseball Podcast Network. Would love if you checked it out.
Yeah, I wanted you to talk about it. Just it's an interesting story, and you talked about Stanford and Cal coming into the ACC, and just having that as kind of the fabric of this conference this year, which is going to be a really compelling season in the ACC. It's just really interesting. So I'm glad you kind of talked about that real quick. And again, you can check that out on the D1 Baseball Podcast feed. Darren, my biggest question for you from the get-go is, how do we get you up to Charlottesville this year, man?
I'm working on it, man. I have made it known to the powers that be that I love the dish. I grew up going to some games there. I'm from Virginia, as you know. So like I have made it known, hey, I would absolutely love to come up and do a series. My schedule is largely TBD to this point. So I will keep you abreast at the happenings. Hopefully it is in the cards for me to call at least a series up there this year. It's a great question. Great question.
That's really the only reason I got you on here. And for those of you who don't know, Darren and I, we go back to Elon, our days there. Actually, Darren, I think you're the second Elon guest we've had on here. Connor O'Neill just barely beat you to the punch.
Oh man, okay. That's fair. Well, see, like he's a real Elon guy as opposed to me, right? I'm a graduate. I have a graduate degree, so my time was limited. I didn't get the full experience,
We
but
count it all the same.
yeah, for sure.
Time
I do.
spent.
Time
All
spent,
right.
money spent. I'm in. It's fine.
Well, let's get into this baseball season, especially in the ACC. The preseason coaches poll just came out last week. Virginia picked as the preseason favorite in the poll, Florida State and Clemson, the others getting first place votes. Is that right about where you would see it, or do you have someone else that you would pick? I mean, mind you're on a UVA centric podcast, but we'll let you pick whoever you want. It's your preseason pick.
I would tell this to anyone, and so far this preseason, I have. I think Virginia maybe has the best roster that Brian O'Connor has had in his time at Virginia, which is saying a lot because they've won the whole thing, right? I just think with the returns of Harrison Didwick and Jay Woolfolk, the potential is so great. Evan Blanco is a breakout guy last year, gives them a bona fide ace, which is not something I feel like, or I don't think UVA fans would feel like they've had the past several years. It's been kind of a mishmashed pitching situation, and they've still made the best of it. So you've got some established players. The young guys are another year older, right? I mean, Henry Godbout has been a revelation for them up the middle. I just feel very strongly about Virginia. You add a new piece too. I mean, I like James Nunnally as much as any freshman in the conference. I know we just talked about the fact that I did a podcast series on Rentaro Sasaki. If not for Rentaro, I'd be all in on Nunnally as ACC Freshman of the Year, and I still think he could win it. I love their team, love the roster. To your point about the others picked highly in the ACC, I think it's to be expected, right? Clemson makes sense as another of those top two or three. Anytime you've got the consistency that they've had over the past few years under Eric Bakich now, and you've got potentially a top five position player and a top five starting pitcher in the country, both preseason first team All-Americans, Cam Cannarella and Aiden Knock. Obviously, you can't win 45, 50 games with two dudes, but it goes a long way. So I think they make sense. And then, I mean, Florida State, for obvious reasons, they're going to be more built on their pitching and defense this year than they were last year. It felt like last year's lineup was just otherworldly with their timeliness and the way they could mash even at the bottom of the order. It's going to be predicated on defense a lot of the time for Florida State, but they've still got some dudes who can hit. Of course, Jamie Arnold and Cam Leiter as your top two options as starting pitchers, that matters. So yeah, like that makes sense that those are the top three. I have a lot of conviction on Duke this year. They are probably who I would throw in next, and even if I was, say, picking, if we're laying out a hypothetical scenario in which the ACC gets 4 to Omaha again, I would maybe throw them into that mix before like a Florida
Yeah,
State, just because I
absolutely.
like so much what Chris Pollard has been doing there, and they return a lot. Ben Miller almost hit 400 last year as their third baseman, and I mean, like he's back again. There's just a maturity about that team and their approach, and the guys they have. They've got second year guys back like AJ Gracia and Kyle Johnson, a two-way guy who's going to pitch a lot. He's going to hit a lot. I feel very strongly about Duke. And then just while we're sort of just like going through the tiers, I think there's a low floor but high ceiling category for me in the ACC this year. And talking about Stanford, who just objectively was bad last year, they have a chance to be really good. If things click for Stanford, it's an Omaha capable team. So they're one that I'm keeping an eye on as a team that could be in the bottom third of the league, could be in the top four. Who knows? The other one to keep an eye on in that regard, and I talked about this with Clemson, right? Potential top five pitcher position player. Louisville is a really interesting team this year. Patrick Forbes, for the first time in his career, is going to be a pitcher only for them. He's going to be their ace. He's got, I mean, electrifying stuff. He's on the short list for, ACC Pitcher of the Year watch list types, right? And then Zion Rose is back for a second year. He's finally going to have a position. They've committed to playing him in the outfield, so that's going to make hitting and getting on base theoretically easier. He's a tremendous athlete. I mean, he again, they could very well be ACC Pitcher of the Year and ACC Player of the Year if things go right. So I think that makes the ceiling especially high for a team like Louisville, even though again they. Who knows? If things go a certain way, they could be like a bottom third of the league team. It's a compelling conference this year in a lot of ways.
The depth of the conference, and you mentioned, about five teams, the Omaha potential, and there's a lot of good teams, like you said, like it could go really well or it could not go really well. It just kind of depends how the cards fall. And looking at the top of the conference, obviously, I think you've got some really good top like echelon teams there with Virginia, Florida State, North Carolina, Clemson, Duke, and I'm also pretty high on. So, really like how the conference sets up, and it's going to be some really compelling ACC weekends this year. Just almost every weekend, it feels like. Real
Let
quick,
me
last
add
year,
in, let me touch on that, Preston. We haven't even talked about Wake Forest, who was last,
which is bizarre to say.
they were the preseason number one last year. They're still ranked. They're still really good. And their head coach, Tom Walter, has said, he's on the record as saying he believes this team is better. And that was a team with like several pros. It was the reasoning for their number one preseason ranking, right? So because they're not number one preseason, they're kind of lying in the weeds and going unnoticed here. Like that's a team that could end up in the top five in Omaha.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they got off to just kind of a weird start and never really fully clicked for them last year. But yeah, obviously the talent that Wake Forest traditionally has and the pitching that they can, kind of produce. Last year we got to Omaha, all SEC, all ACC, College World Series. Would you bet your money on that again?
I would bet on 7 of the 8. I think both conferences
Gotta leave
making
one
up,
open.
yeah, just because like there are good outside teams And when I say outsiders, I mean non-ACC SEC, right? Like I could see it in a way that it's 4-3, and in this particular season, I could very much envision 4 ACC, 3 SEC, and then like an Oregon State or Oregon's really good. You might have some mid-majors make a run. Dallas Baptist is a very good team, as they usually are. And it has felt like they're kind of on the cusp of breaking out and making a push to Omaha. UC Santa Barbara has maybe the best starting pitcher in the country in Tyler Bremner. That is a really good starting point for a team that wants to try to get to Omaha and win a regional and win a super regional. So it feels, I would not bet against at least one of those teams making a run and getting to Omaha. And of course, I mean, once when you're getting into the place that the ACC and the SEC are, you get to into a situation where like you might have to have teams face each other in super regionals, right? So you go against your own cause at some point to get teams to Omaha. And I think the draw obviously is gonna mean a lot when it comes to these types of distributions between the eight Omaha teams. But yeah, I would probably, if I was like making a hard prediction, like set this in stone, this is my word, this is what I believe is going to happen this year, I think it would be 4 ACC, 3 SEC, and then one of those others, likely an Oregon or an Oregon State.
Which in that case, you'd like the ACC's chance of actually getting some more production out in Omaha if
Yeah,
they can
maybe
do that.
finally. Holy cow.
It's been quite a while. But let's get into Virginia now and this team this year. We talked about them picked as the preseason favorite in the Coaches Bowl. D1 has them ranked number 2 in the preseason, right behind Texas A&M. How do you view this Virginia team? I know you had the chance to talk with Brian O'Connor for the podcast. Y'all been talking to every ACC baseball coach, which is really good stuff, especially if you want to kind of get a primer for the upcoming ACC baseball season. But just kind of where do you view this Virginia team at this point?
I mean, in some ways it is steady as she goes for Oak's program, and then in other ways we alluded to it earlier, there are some things that are prior established this season that have not been in recent years that they've still had a lot of success in, right? I mean, again, last year the question marks really were around their pitching and around a starting rotation, which seemed kind of up and down. And I mean, we did not know Evan Blanco was the ace until midway through the year, even, right? So now that you've got him coming back and having the breakout year that he had, and Jay coming back and likely being in the starting rotation, but he's done both, so like he's going to have his head wrapped around that. There's a lot more solidified with the pitching staff that had been question marks. I mean, again, going into the last 2, 3 seasons, even for Virginia. So it's like, okay, if you can count on this coaching staff to get the most out of a team that doesn't know what it is at the beginning of the season in a lot of ways, you return a lot. There is not an identity issue with Virginia from the jump this year, right? So it's a team that knows what it is, as opposed to previous years where they didn't at the season's beginning. And it just feels more rock solid even than it was before. So I mean, like the lineup's still going to be killer. I don't it's amazing that you lose maybe the best shortstop in the country in Griff O'Farrell, Casey Sauk, Ethan Anderson. Like, it's amazing that you can lose those guys and still potentially have the best lineup in the ACC, one of the best lineups in the country. But that's the way it looks for Virginia. And we haven't mentioned Jacob Ferentz yet. Like, he was, I mean, that is a dream scenario for a transfer coming from a lower level and turning into one of the best catchers in the entire country at the Division I level. I mean, to be that solid, up the middle, have the assurance of your pitching staff being what it's going to be, and knowing for the most part what you're going to get out of most of the guys, or what you should get out of most of the guys. That all is the recipe for them being number two in the country. And I know within D1's walls, there were some arguments made for Virginia to be the number one team, which, I mean, it seems obvious that Texas A&M should be the
Yes.
preseason number
Yeah.
one team in the country. There's really no way around that. Kind of like there was no way around Wake Forest last year, no matter what you thought of the team as a whole. But I mean, it was a conversation that was had. So yeah, like I UVA fans should feel very, very good about this season. I contend again, it might be the best team Oaks had.
That's a lot of what I've been thinking and talking to people around the program and just talking to other people in college baseball. That's kind of the thinking. And it is crazy because, like you mentioned, they're losing one of the best shortstops in program history and Griff O'Farrell that meant so much of the program. Ethan Anderson, who was a multiple first team all ACC guy, Casey Sauk, you've been kind of a fixture out there for them. It's crazy to think what they lost and still being so high on them coming into the season. But like you said, with that lineup, they've broken the home run record, I think, 2 straight years now.
Yeah.
And just going on paper, going through conservative projections, I don't see how they don't break it again this year, just because everyone in that lineup has a little bit of pop at least. Even Luke Hansen, he's probably a guy, and the coaches are really happy with his progress this offseason. So he's probably a guy that hits over 10 home runs this year. And that's kind of on the lower end in that lineup. So yeah, it's really interesting. But the pitching you mentioned, that's probably the most intriguing part because I'm trying to remember a year where you felt as figured out pitching wise going into the season for Virginia. And it's been a while because last season was the biggest question mark that I've seen during my time covering Virginia, just kind of all the different factors. Jay Wolfolk trying to go from a reliever to starter. Evan Blanco was just a, somewhat used freshman reliever, and now he was trying to go into a starting role. Jack O'Connor was trying to go from freshman to sophomore year. Bradley Hodges was injured and had Tommy John surgery, and you had no idea what it was going to look like. And somehow, some way, Drew Dickinson, the pitching coach at UVA, just kind of figures out a way by the time they get to the postseason to get enough out of those guys. But now, going into this year, having a true kind of ace at the front on a Friday night with Evan Blanco, having a guy in Jay Wolfolk who's performed at the biggest stages at this point, and then having just a whole list of guys. I think Brian O'Connor said there's about six guys in contention for that last spot right now on Sundays, and then also you got the midweek games too. So it's a lot of depth in this pitching group right now, and I think that's the reason to feel good about it going into this year. Last year it was a question mark, so you're like, are they just going to have enough pitching to get through it at the end? And that was kind of the big question. But looking at the position players, who's one that intrigues you the most?
I find myself being magnetized toward middle infielders, especially in this league. It was a self-aware moment as we're doing these preseason interviews with all 16 coaches, and it's you kind of generally toss it up to the, hey, talk about your team. Like, what intrigues you the most? What do you like the most about your team? And then I find that almost immediately my follow-up is about somebody in their middle infield, just because that's, I don't know, that's my frame of reference. Just like Danny Graves co-hosts with me, former closer at Miami and with the Cincinnati Reds and others in the major leagues, he is more inclined to ask about the backside of the bullpen, right? It's just his frame of reference. So I've been a huge Henry Godbout fan since he got there at UVA and was on the grounds for the first time. I mean, this is a dude that pretty under the radar had an 1100 OPS last year. Like, just not a, I mean, not again, because of the other pieces in the lineup that you really prioritize if you're the opposition. It was under the radar, and it was like kind of unsuspecting. And in doing some prep for this season, you get to looking at their numbers and you're like, man, I realized he was good, but holy cow, like his numbers were great. And it justifies his selection as a preseason All-American by D1. And even though like second base is kind of a loaded position this year. I mean, Coastal Carolina's got a guy, Blake Barthol, who got left off of the list. And I'm going to see him in Jacksonville for the Jack's College Baseball Classic, an event won by the Cavaliers last year. And I think the world of Barthol, but again, Godbout deserves the spot ahead of him based on his production from last year. So I think in a year where you maybe you're going to get a little bit more attention when you're in the batter's box, how steady do those numbers stay? Do they take a hike up even if you're Godbout? I think he and you know, Henry Ford kind of fits in this category as well. Anybody who was in the lineup last year kind of fits this description. Jacob Ferentz is going to have a ton more attention placed on him as somebody that we need to strategize to get out, specifically and to work around, right? So I would put Godbout at the front of that list, but it doesn't mean that I'm not intrigued by those other situations as well.
But you mentioned, guys, you have to strategize around the lineup. How many times can you do that over and over again
Right. At some point, you just love to just like, I want my pitcher to face a hitter and try to get him out. And it's not a chess match, right? Like you would love for that to be the case more often than not, but that's been the thing with Virginia. They stack the lineup in a way that makes I mean, every single plate appearance, you really have to think about it. And again, it's going to be the same way this year. And it's going to be, I say that Godbout and others are going to get more attention, but they all also kind of like drown each other out in a way. So it's how much concentrated attention can you pay to one of them if I'm saying it about a handful?
And the guy that kind of intrigues me the most is a guy that is not getting a ton of talk right now, but he's going to be in my five breakout player column that's coming to the saber.com soon, and that's Aiden Teel. This is a guy that, obviously he went through last year, was a pitcher, was the closer for a good bit last season, and then kind of slowly transitioned to being in the outfield. And some of the plays this guy made when he would come in just for that one inning, he just make that one play out in the outfield, and the ball was like a magnet to him. Like he just found ways to make plays out there. Now he's going to be your center fielder. And then last season didn't have a ton of at bats either, but still had some pop at the plate. Hit a couple home runs. He is a guy that now getting more regular time for the first time in his career, because obviously the first year Tommy John surgery didn't play at all, was just kind of around the team, was obviously a good clubhouse guy for that team. Then last year moving into kind of being more of a pitcher, this is the first time that he's really going to get to, Virginia fans are going to really get to see him. And I think he's going to be a guy that kind of explodes onto the scene unexpectedly, because it's Virginia is kind of like the prestige of a magic trick. You're like, all right, look over here at Henry Ford, Henry Godbout, Jacob Ferentz, Harrison Didwig, and then over here we've got Aiden Teel, Luke Hansen, Eric Becker is a guy that we're not talking
Exactly. We
about
haven't
as
even mentioned
much.
Becker.
Who's
I was
probably going to
just
be your
about to
starting
say.
shortstop and atop your lineup.
Yeah, and our Aaron Fitt at D1 Baseball feels very strongly about Becker as a great shortstop and filling the Griff O'Farrell void to whatever degree is even possible. And him doing it admirably. But Becker is another piece that is just like back from a year ago that stands to be better. And I'm glad you mentioned Teal. Was he, this is off the top of my head, was he, I think his line for the season was 4 for 10 at the plate and 3 of the 4 hits were homers, right?
That is
Yeah. So like
it.
that in and of itself shows you the capability, right? It's a small sample size. So that maybe will diminish that kind of production would diminish a little bit over more plate appearances. But like that's an insane pace if you get him 100 at bats. Like that's the potential is there for him. And for a lineup to have so many returners that are intriguing like that, it's nice to be able to mix in somebody who's kind of like new to the party in a full-time capacity.
It's a good headache for Brian O'Connor and Kevin McMullen and everyone there to figure out because you mentioned James Nunnally earlier. He's a guy that's probably going to factor into the lineup this year, and then that kind of leaves guys like Antonio Parada, who is a backup first baseman for them. But with a guy we haven't mentioned yet, Chris Arroyo, who we should probably talk about at some point. If he's pitching and hitting, you think about some of those midweek games or whenever Chris Arroyo is pitching, then Parada's a guy that comes in at first base, and he's probably going to be a pretty big factor in the lineup as well. So just a lot of different ways you can go. Well, let's look at most intriguing pitcher for you. A lot of names that you could go with here.
I feel like I'm a little chalky on these questions. I am such a Jay Wolfolk fan. And there's a human element to why I'm intrigued by him this year. I feel like last year was this plunge, right? It's like, okay, he's finally full-time just a baseball player. This is his break year to break out. And we see it feels like more and more in college sports across the board now, where you get the, especially in the instance where you have sort of the unexpected year back. This is a guy who sincerely believed that last year he was going to break out, he was going to get drafted, he was going to move on with his life and his baseball career past his time as a Virginia Cavalier. I think this happened by the time the end of the season came, really, to some degree, it started to creep in. There becomes, I think, like a sigh of relief that you're not dealing with that extra pressure at some point. And I think Jay probably is in a place headed into this year where there's less pressure that he's putting on himself. Like, that does not instantly mean he's going to be lights out and more dominant and more consistent on the mound than he was last year. But doesn't it stand to reason that that's going to make it a lot easier for him to be all of those things? He's one of my favorite players in the ACC. He's just such a great dude, and that is evident by his sticking up for Coach Oak and the rest of the coaching staff in Omaha when all of that occurred with pitching to Vance Honeycutt and deciding not to pitch to Casey Cook, who had objectively been a better hitter against you all year. I love Jay. I want so badly for him to have the kind of success that he wants. And I think he's in a position this year in particular where, hopefully anyways, and this is where maturity comes in. We talked about it with some other players before. I think and I hope he's in a position where he is self-assured in where he's at in his baseball career, and it's not constant thinking about what's next and putting pressure on himself to get a first-round draft pick in one performance, right? Like, he's not pitching for a first-round pick every time he takes the mound. And I think it's going to become more about the team success, not that he wasn't a team guy before, but it's going to become more about sort of like the season as a whole, and he's going to pace himself. And I'm really looking forward to what Jay does this year.
We just had Jay on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and just if you haven't listened to it, go back and listen, because the way this guy talks about not only baseball, just his life and just kind of some of the stuff that he was talking about, he was talking about going into the Mississippi State game when he kind of had his big breakout night in the postseason. He was reading messages or stuff on Twitter, and people were saying, "Oh, great! This is not going to be good going against Mississippi State with Jay Wolfolk starting." And he just kind of filed that all away, went into there, and just kind of had that game where he was like, "What do you think now?" And so, great conversation with him. And yeah, I think he's got a better hold of who he is as a pitcher, and he talks a lot about that going into this season. There's a couple of different guys I could go with here, because I think while there is some knowns in Blanco and Wolfolk, there's a lot of high upside, or just kind of mysterious stuff about this pitching staff this year. Bryson Moore is one that I keep getting coaches talking about coming into this season. He's a guy that pitched a little bit last year, and coaches were high on him there too, and then kind of dealt with some injuries, dealt with some inconsistency as a freshman. But I think coming back this year, I would expect he's also another guy that I'm going to write about as a breakout candidate this year because coaches really like his stuff, and it would not surprise me if he's part of that weekend rotation by the end of it, because he's got some really good stuff. And then obviously Chris Arroyo, just because what are we going to get from this guy at the plate as a pitcher? I mean, having a JUCO guy come in and make as much of a preseason impact as he has already is saying something.
Yeah, it's one of the few unknowns with this team, right? Whether the get all the, whether all the guys perform the exact way they did last year or not, or if they improve as second year players, one would expect a Henry Ford to do. There aren't many players who look to contribute to this team that were not familiar with their game to some degree. So the buzz around Arroyo is especially intriguing. I get that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Last thing here on Virginia. Let's touch on this. What has to happen for UVA to make it back to Omaha for a third year, fourth time in the last 5 years?
It's a good question. I think, given everything that we've said, they are a team that's certainly going to be good enough to do that. It's a cop out in a way to say that it's going to be about, how they're playing down the stretch and staying healthy and who they match up with in the postseason. Those are probably the bulk of the truest answer to this question. But I just mentioned to Jay, if we're going to assume that Evan Blanco is the same pitcher, if not maybe even a little better than that he was last year, if we're going to assume they're going to have a breakout candidate for the rotation like a Bryson Moore, and that the depth is there and that everybody else is doing their thing. Jay's got to be the best Jay. And it doesn't have to happen every day he pitches, but more often than not, he's got to be what he showed to be at Mississippi State. I think that is going to be, or against Mississippi State, I think that's going to be the surest way to solidify Virginia as one of those teams. You could pinpoint certain hitters, and it's just like, again, assuming no one has just an uncharacteristically terrible year, I think Jay is the one where you want to see him be the best version of himself, and that is the surest way for them to. Does that make sense? I'm treating it kind of like a math equation, right? Like, okay, you can pick a 100 out of 100 performance for the season for any player on the team. Which one of those would make the greatest impact? I think it's Jay Wolfolk.
I would absolutely second that. I mean, I could see the numbers flying by your head, like Zach Galifianakis in The Hangover. If Jay can be that number two guy for them, at the very least, just kind of be something solidified there. Then, yeah, I think that would be tremendous. And just if he can continue to keep that fire that he pitches with when he's at his top. I mean, you saw it when he was, as a freshman, sophomore, when he was still balancing football on top of baseball. When he came in and closed games, got out of a tough situation, just kind of the fire that he had coming off the mound. That's the same fire that I saw against Mississippi State, against Kansas State. Even on to Omaha in the College World Series. If you can kind of keep that going, then that's when you know you've got Jay Wolfolk at his best, at his peak of powers. And you mentioned just kind of matchups and everything. Looking at the ACC schedule, they've got to go to Tallahassee this year, which is probably going to be one of the biggest ACC series of the season. Other than that, they have a pretty good schedule at Georgia Tech comes shortly after that. Which will be an interesting one just with what they're doing down there. Drew Burris obviously is one of the names to watch in the ACC as always. So really interested to see there. But yeah, I like their chances of getting back to Omaha. And I think Virginia fans, if you haven't been paying attention to how the football and basketball seasons have been going, they're quite ready to see some success in Charlottesville. Before I let you go, Darren, give me one team that one team, one player to watch this year and the rest of the ACC that you think are going to be pretty entertaining this year.
Oh man, the league is so deep,
It
and
is. We talked about it.
I'm so enamored with Cam Cannarella now that he is the number one target by an opposing team, right? Like he's the
Yeah.
guy you so I did his very first ACC series was at Clemson. And remember, Cannarella, or it was first, of course, it was at home, but they played
Yeah.
Duke, and I did that series. And I remember we had this running bit on the show, Danny and I, of like, I have a running list of like my favorite ACC player, right? And the bit is that it changes constantly.
Yeah.
But there are known guys that are frequently types of guys that are frequently on my list and at the top of my list. So he for the season prior, it turned out to be Dom Pitelli, the shortstop from Miami. Do you remember him? So
Yeah.
he was for the year the guy that I ultimately said was my favorite player in the ACC. So he needed to be replaced after he moved on. And so I did this opening ACC weekend, Cam Cannarella against Duke at home there at Doug Kingsmore Stadium. And he had this like fire to him. It was some Juan Soto-esque motions on pitches inside and very emotional player. And he came in as a freshman that was not pumped up in a way that we're talking about Rintaro Sasaki for Stanford. He's like the extreme example of a hyped up freshman. James Nunnally has some hype. That was not there at all for Cam Cannarella in Eric Backage's first year at Clemson. And so after that series, I remember coming back and I told Danny, I was like, I found my new favorite ACC player. He's got an awesome name. He's chippy. And I thought I was like discovering something, right? I thought
Yeah.
it was like it was like I found this guy. He's going to be my little darling, who's a good ACC player, but not otherworldly talent
Yeah.
wise. And that next thing you know, he's a projected top five, top 10 MLB draft pick. So I love watching Cam Cannarella play. I would put him at the very top of that list. Drew Burris at Georgia Tech, you just mentioned them, might be the best hitter in the country.
Yeah.
And they have reloaded in a lot of ways with some pitching that looks to be more consistent for them. That's one of those kind of low floor, high ceiling teams as well. I wouldn't put
For
them
sure, yeah.
right next to Stanford and Louisville in that category, but there's some potential there with Georgia Tech. So, man, we're loaded with great players. Jamie Arnold, obviously, like it might be the best slider in the country, and he just added a changeup this year. Like you were Jamie Arnold, and you're just like adding changeups. This is it's ridiculous. He has a chance to have a really ridiculous year as a left-handed starting pitcher. I'm trying to think of who else stands out. These are kind of obvious names, but I'll have my favorites that I
Yeah.
cling to, right? Like little gritty defensive middle infielders. There's a Justin DeCriscio who transferred to NC State appeals to me in that regard. One of the best defensive player, like gold glove caliber defensive play at shortstop. He'll be a lot of fun to watch, and it's a perfect fit in place of Brandon Butterworth, who was there last year and kind of broke out as a defensive guy who had some knocks in places. Man, there's just I could go on. Like I'm going to cut myself off, but I could continue and continue to hype up certain players that I'm excited to see and that you should be too.
Yeah, no, there's a ton, and the list can go on and on. And yeah, just this season with Virginia kind of coming into it, kind of towards the top, I would hope that kind of Virginia fans kind of take a greater interest in the rest of the ACC, just because there's going to be a lot of good teams and a lot of good series this year. So keep an eye on that. Darren, I want to appreciate you for coming on the podcast. And two things I want to request. One, we get you back on here later in the baseball season. And
Done,
two,
done, and done.
we get you to Charlottesville this
That
year.
one's less in my control, but I can promise one. I think two of two are going to happen this year. So, yeah. And in return, I will make a request of your audience. I know you're not Stanford fans, likely, but we just talked about intriguing players. I promise you, Rentaro Sasaki is one of the most interesting players in college baseball that you'll see this year. So check out on the D1 Baseball podcast feed, Rentaro. It's a six-part narrative series, kind of walking you through how he made the decision to bypass NPB in Japan, go straight to the States. He enrolled early at Stanford after committing. The episode that just recently came out, episode three, is about his adjustment to student athlete life in the United States, where he does not know the prevailing language, English. So he's doing all this while trying to learn English kind of on the fly and learn how to play baseball against United States players in college at that level. So, super intriguing, a player to watch for sure this year. I would love if you checked out Rintaro, the podcast series.
Yeah, it's really good. I've caught some clips so far and I've listened to at least one episode, but definitely go check that out on the D1 Baseball feed. Darren, thanks for joining. That is it for the Who's On podcast this week. We will be back later in the week, right ahead of Tony Bennett Appreciation Day against Georgia Tech. That'll be one to watch. So check out everything at thesaber.com. We got a lot of baseball content coming up, a couple feature stories leading up to opening day of the season. Also, follow, subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts, and we will see you later in the week.